George Martin, the man behind the Beatles sound. I'm Lori Kay. Studio genius George Martin was a successful record producer in London, searching for a new sound, when a tape from an unknown Liverpool band fell into his hands.
Brian Epstein walked into my office one day with this rather bad tape. But then there was something about it that was different. It was a little more raucous, a little more, certainly unusual. It wasn't particularly good, as I say. But it was sufficiently interesting for me to say to him, well, OK, I'd like to meet the group. I can't judge on this tape. I'll have to meet them myself. So bring them down from Liverpool, and I will spend an afternoon with them in Abbey Road Studios, and I will give them a test.
It was instant click for George Martin and the Beatles once they met. Martin's new book, All You Need Is Ears, brings back the early days in the studio. More at 5:50. George Martin's biggest joke, the Beatles. I'm Lori Kay. Fellow executives at EMI, where George Martin headed studio production in the early 60s, weren't exactly ready for Martin's latest discovery.
When I came out and said, right, I've got a group called the Beatles, everybody fell around laughing. What a silly name for a group, you know. And George is having one of his comedy turns again, ha, ha, ha. And everybody said, well, you know, another little one of George's quirks, one of his whims that won't mean very much. And I said, I'm serious, I think they're going to be great. The first record wasn't great. It got up to number 17 in the hit parade. And that was Love Me Do. Love,
love me do. It was the second Beatle release, Please Please Me, that went number one. And the Beatle machine was in full gear. Please, 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 oh yeah, like I please you. More tomorrow at 4:50. George Martin and the Beatles, a creative partnership that shook the world. I'm Lori Kay.
They learned about the record business incredibly fast. And whereas when they first came to the studio, I had to tell them roughly what to do. Within a very short period of time, they were telling me what to do. I have a joke about them that, you know, success didn't change them at all. They always were arrogant, self-opinionated devils.
Martin says in the studio with the Beatles, business sometimes took a backseat to fun and games.
I got them into the studio after the first take and said, now I want you to listen to what we've just been doing and tell me what you think of it, and if there's anything you don't like, just say. And George Harrison looked at me and said, well, I don't like your tie for a start. And the others sort of hit him over the head with anything that came handy, and everybody fell around laughing.
After the laughter, it's the producer's job to get quality. More on George Martin's role in the studio at 5:50. Help, I need somebody. Help. Making records, it takes a lot more than talent. I'm Lori Kay. Record producer George Martin cut his teeth on comedy and the classics. When it comes to cutting records, he says producers may be grabbing too much glory.
I think we are pretty important people, and I think we deserve lots of money. But I do not think we are superior to the artist. His role is to get the best out of the artist and to be the really objective person, the person who can stand back and see the whole picture without looking at the detail too much and without being bothered by ego.
Martin says these days, ego enters into it to a great extent.
The side effect of that is that artists themselves look with jealousy at the producer's role, saying, you know, well, being a producer is something to be achieved. I don't think I want to have a producer on my next album. I think I want to produce it myself.
And Martin believes that leads to lack of objectivity when it comes to musical quality. Tomorrow at 4:50, the making of Sgt. Pepper. Sgt. Pepper, technically an impossible project. I'm Lori Kay. George Martin had to call on all his creative powers to produce this experimental album, especially on Beatle tunes like the Mr. Kite song. For the benefit
of Mr. Kite. John wanted a very psychedelic kind of circus sound, because this song that he'd written was based on a genuine poster that he had hanging up in his house. And he just wanted to convey all the gaiety and the swirling noise of a fairground.
But Martin and the Beatles wanted a richer sound.
So I got some of these recordings, put them down on tape, and got Jeff Emmerich, who was my engineer, to cut them up into small bits about a foot or 15 inches long, which he did. And then I said, now, fling them all up in the air, Jeff, which he did. And he said, now what do you want me to do? I said, well, pick them up again and stick them all back together.
That's just one example of the genius that makes George Martin a madman and an innovator in the studio. A Day in the Life at 5:50. I read the news today, oh boy. Just a typical day in the life of George Martin and the Beatles. I'm Laurie Kay.
Day in the Life was very much a case of putting two songs together. John had done the outside bits and Paul had done the middle. And we had this 24 bars of nothing in the middle where Paul kept just playing away at the same notes on the piano.
Producer George Martin says filling those 24 bars was the next step.
And John said, well, I want something there that's going to build up from nothing into the most enormous sound possible. He said, I want it to start very quiet and then maybe very low in pitch and then get very shrieking and very loud. He said, let's use a symphony orchestra to do that. I said, fine, it's a good idea.
Of course, 40 symphony musicians need a score. And once again, that's where John Lennon stepped out, leaving A Day in the Life in George Martin's capable hands. Tomorrow at 4:50, not everyone became a millionaire along with the Beatles. You never give me your money. Money can be second to happiness, but only for so long. I'm Laurie Kay. George Martin was the studio wizard with the Beatles from their very first hit record, but he wasn't with them when it came time to collect royalty checks.
What I stuck out for was a royalty or a commission on sales, because I was just getting a salary. On everything I made, I just got a very little salary too. I was getting £3,000 a year, which is about, at today's rate, about $7,000 a year. And I was working every hour that you could think of, and no commission, no royalty or anything. And so I had to negotiate then a royalty with them, which was pretty low. It amounted to about 1/5 of 1%. Oh, I get by with a little help from my
friends. Martin says even though he only made about $7,000 a year at EMI, while others within the Beatle Empire made millions, it's worked out well. They're all still friends. At 5:50, a Beatlesque bomb. The second time around for Sergeant Pepper. I'm Laurie Kay. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Record producer George Martin has the distinction of making the same masterful music with two totally different supergroups. The Beatles' original, however, fared a lot better than the Bee Gees' remake. I read the news today,
oh boy. When you hear Barry Gibb singing A Day in the Life, for example, one cannot help but feel that it's different from the original. And obviously John Lennon's voice was so suitable. I mean, in defense of Barry, I don't think I'd like to hear John Lennon singing Night Fever. So, horses for courses.
Martin says at least he had musical control over the ill-fated Sgt. Pepper film, or it could have done real damage to the memory of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper. Tomorrow at 4:50, he had to talk them into using Paul McCartney. James Bond, McCartney style. I'm Laurie Kay. After Paul McCartney played his Live and Let Die theme for producer George Martin, Martin followed with a film score. Then he had to deal with a Hollywood movie mogul.
And he said, great score you did there. Great score. I said, thank you very much. He said, now this is what I want to do in the picture. I accepted that. I thought, well, it won't be bad doing a James Bond picture. And he said, now who are we going to get to sing it? I said, well, you've got Paul McCartney. I said, sure, sure. I said, but what do you think of Thelma Houston? I said, I think she's great, but you've got Paul McCartney. As tactfully as possible, I had to tell him that if he didn't have Paul McCartney, he probably wouldn't have the song. Paul McCartney and Harry Saltzman, to this day, have never met.
George Martin, along with Paul McCartney, managed to make the James Bond thriller musically unforgettable. More at 5:50. Growing Up with the Beatles in the studio. I'm Laura Kay. Musical growth comes with expanding knowledge of technique and ability. And producer George Martin says his years with the Beatles reflected their development.
The boss role turned around and they were telling me what to do. Or rather, not telling me what to do technically, because then they couldn't do that, but certainly sort of altering the role. And I guess the unhappiest time when I tended to lose control was during the Let It Be period, when everybody was at each other's throats. And so I was quite surprised when Paul rang me up one day and said, look, we want to get back into the studio and we want you to produce us as you used to. Will you come and do another album with us? And that was how we did Abbey Road. And that was our swan song. And we kind of all knew that it was the last one. But it was a very happy recording. So we all ended happily ever after.
George Martin continues, of course, to produce and create music that will move millions. His book, All You Need Is Ears, puts it all in print. The George Martin series produced by Ron Hummel.